Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sander Lanch podcast. Today, we are going to be discussing four chapters of The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson. It's 63 through 66, wherein, you know, there's some prep stuff. You know, Kaladin and the team are getting ready for the new way of doing bridge runs. And then Dalinar and co, they're getting ready to do stuff with Thaddeus. But really, where things get crazy is when the Battle of the Tower begins and Dalinar suffers a betrayal. Bum, bum, bum. So that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Betrayal.
Sorry. I'm Data, and with me is...
Jack.
Joe.
And Jamie.
So hang on to something. Sander Lanch is about to begin.
Fear in the blade, the spirits of the fallen fate, scorn and the grave, my legacy and name. Bend in the code, the father duty long bestowed, burdened by the shame. When order dies, there will be no blind victory. When order dies, I will be denied by history. I give my everything, return the reckoning. Glare of the ghost fills my eyes. When order dies.
So yeah. Four chapters, and it seems like very much into the Sander Lanch. Things are happening, maybe even finally, depending on how long you guys have been waiting for things to kick off here. So what did you think of these four chapters?
These were good. Yeah, definitely just the first couple of chapters just felt like they were winding up to something, which you know, obviously they did. I liked the little bit we got with Leighton, just about his history. He's probably going to die now. and then... I love the little note that, oh, I've tried to talk to Sigsil about Hoyt, and Sigsil is not about that. I'm like, yep, that tracks. Oh, sorry, I've got a bit of a cold at the moment, so if I sound raspy or if I start coughing, I apologize. And then the chapter with Dalinar and Navani was mostly just kind of, except for the bits where they're talking about Dalinar's wife, and, like, he can't even hear her name if someone else says it. I'm like, well, that's a wrinkle.
No joke.
So, yeah, I think... Yeah, you know, we'd already established there was something supernatural going on with like the Night Mother or whatever it was about that, but I guess there's your confirmation because that's messed up. But then we get to the bridge run and like the action was a whole lot of fun. You're not expecting anything, and then there was the rug pull. It's like actually Thaddeus is just like fuck you all, I'm out. So yeah, we've been waiting for I feel like throughout this book we've been sort of just going, is Thaddeus a bad guy? Is he not a bad guy? Just sort of waiting for something to drop either way, and here's our confirmation, I guess. I did spend a lot of time after reading the chapters going, why did Thaddeus do that when he had the golden opportunity with the investigation? And then realized, oh, that's exactly the point. He had the golden opportunity with the investigation and publicly exonerated Dalinar. So now when he leaves him to die, no one's going to suspect that Thaddeus did that on purpose.
Interesting point, you know?
Yeah. So... Yeah, no, like that was very well done. It's like the whole Thaddeus thing has kept me guessing one way or the other the entire way through the book. So I'm like, okay, there it is, very very skillfully done. I like it. Cool. Now to see what happens to Dalinar and Adolin in this section.
Indeed, that is the we shall see.
Yeah.
But it we've really been on the, as you said, we've been on the cuff for a while, but like. Is Thaddeus, like, what do we think? Is he not as bad as we think he is? Although every time you thought maybe he's not so bad, he, you know, would do something horrible and be like, okay, well, and now we've got our answer, I guess.
Like, it's the Wreck-It Ralph thing. It's like, the whole time, he's been a bad guy, but not a bad guy, as far as we could tell. Because, like, he was never good to his bridge crews. He was always just an absolute shit to them. And he was kind of a condescending ass to Dalinar, even when he was on his side. Or appeared to be on his side. So we never thought he was good, but we didn't know if he was bad.
yeah, we never loved Thaddeus, that's for sure.
No.
Yeah, I mean, who could have expected Thaddeus doing what he did? Certainly not all three of us at some point in the predicament section. No, these chapters were good. Yeah, I agree with Dak. It did feel like a wind-up for most of this section. I was a little like, oh, this is where we're stopping this week because, you know, I want to know how everything shakes out in this battle. And so just taking it kind of step by step, we've got, you know, the Navani stuff. I just don't know, like, what – I still don't know how to feel about this because I feel like it's still kind of weird. Doesn't seem like a super great idea to date your brother's ex-wife or widow, or I guess not widow. Date your dead brother's wife. There you go.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like a widow. Cool idea.
You had it.
Yeah. Sorry. My brain's not working today. And, like, it just feels icky. And, like, them being happy together doesn't make it better, doesn't make it feel less icky to me. Even if they're happy, like, it's still weird. And so that's kind of whole thing, that whole section was kind of like, eh. And then, you know, we have the battle from Cowden's perspective a little bit from, and then, of course, from Adolin and from Dalinar. A major bummer, which, I mean, you know. What else were we expecting? Our bridge crew guys always get the shaft. It's like major bummer. Like two of our bridge crew guys got injured. So hopefully they'll be okay. And then yeah, this battle, this giant cool battle. Super excited. I was super excited to see them win on the tower for once, right? Which I mean, that could still happen. We don't know.
It does seem unlikely at this point.
I don't know. I feel like that build up at the end of the section of like farewell. It's like I feel like they're still going to pull it out somehow, which we can get into in predicaments. But anyway, I feel like they're still going to be able to win somehow. And so I'm a little baffled by Sidious's play here because like I guess I don't know enough about his motivations to know like why he's doing this. Is he just doing it because he wants to be the biggest, best high prince on the block? Like what does he get out of killing Dalinar? Like what is the point? And so I just like I'm confused as to like why this is all happening, what the reason behind it is. So I'm hoping that gets revealed too, because I'm just like, I don't know why he's doing this. Is he just doing it because he's a bad dude? That seems like such a crummy motivation.
Because I'm evil.
Yeah, exactly. Like mustache twirl. Like that's not that interesting. If he's just doing it because he's evil, like there's got to be some other reason.
That's fair. Yeah.
Now I'm going back to my camp to get Mr. Bigglesworth.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm hoping that we get some insight as to like what's actually going on. Because the only perspective we get from Sidious is basically like, well, my old friend, I told you that honor book would get you killed one day. Ha ha ha. Like what does that even mean? Like why do you care like about him following this code of honor? You think he deserves to die just because he follows some code that you think is dumb? Like I just don't get it. So anyway, I'm a little unsatisfied just where we left off for that reason, because I want to know like what's going on? Like why is all this going down, and what's actually going on at the root of like this motivation for him? So I'm excited to read more so that I can figure out what the heck's going on.
That's fair. Yeah. We've started the process of whatever this is, but you're right. We haven't gotten much of an idea about why, other than, I mean, Adolin suspected him all along of trying to do something, but even Adolin never really clear or consistent on what he was trying to do, whether it was like, he's trying to kill you or he's trying to steal like, that last section, Adolin's like, I'm going to keep my hand on my money purse whenever he's around.
Like, what does that mean? Oh, man. Yeah, it just doesn't. It seems like nobody understands his motivation. So it's like, what is his motivation? What the heck's going on with this dude?
So maybe we shall discover. Hopefully we would discover. What if we didn't? Just never know why Sadius did it.
Yeah, we're 90% through the book, so that would be a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, let's see, is that we are 91% on my Kindle after these chapters. So, yeah, that's 9% of the book left. Maybe, I mean, he could come out in the next book. We could learn later.
And we never see Sadius again.
No, he rides off into the sunset.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I'd like answers. I don't know what we're going to find out now. I don't know what we're going to find out later. I spent most of the chapter, I just remembered you, Data, saying that something like we would probably expect some good discussion or some ideas coming out of these chapters, And I'm reading it and I'm going, there's not really a lot happened. That can only mean we've got a cliffhanger coming. And we did. So, yeah, Kaladin getting a lot of free rein to just kind of do what he wants. In hindsight now, it's like, yeah, okay, because Thaddeus is really up to something else and this is either helping his plan or he just doesn't care anymore. I do feel kind of sad for Shen,
yeah.
Shen, the Parchman. I'm grateful that he doesn't have to be subjected to looking at the desecration of the bones of his people. The Navani stuff, yeah, I don't love that Dalinar's pursuing this. I can't imagine Elokar's going to be particularly happy about it. It doesn't really matter what anyone else feels about it or says about it. But, you know, that may not matter soon. The stuff with his wife not being able to remember her name at all, like literally she has been wiped from his mind. And it's like, oh, yeah, he's forgotten the wife. And I don't know that we've actually established, is this his boon or his curse?
Yeah, we don't know, yeah.
So, you know, perhaps he loved her and just wanted the pain to go away when, you know, obviously he still loved Navani and all that sort of stuff, but he did seem to actually like his wife and other people liked his wife. It's not like she was this horrific person, but
right.
Kind of hoping we get to learn a little bit more about that, even though he's been reluctant to talk about it. I was very interested in one of the epigraphs that was talking about someone. This, like, it was of note because they'd been having visions. I can't remember the exact wording, but we'll get to it obviously when we read through. But I was like, hang on, we know someone like that. You know, it didn't say that it was High Prince Dalinar, so someone else is having visions out there by the sounds of it. And I think the map as well was drawn in the same year by Navani, I think it was. So whatever's happened, if this is happening sort of now, unless these are in the future. I don't know where we actually are at the moment, but that was a particular note to me. And then, of course, the betrayal was awful. And yeah, good job, Brandon. You've kept us guessing the whole way through. I didn't think we would completely trust Thaddeus. Thaddeus has got an agenda, but I didn't see it. Just a blatant gonna leave you on the battlefield to die. That was that's pretty rough.
Yeah, at that point, I feel like you don't see it coming. Maybe I guess that's the point, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Dale and I didn't see it coming. How are we going to see that coming also? Yeah, I hope they can get out of it. I think it was Joe saying the whole thing about the farewell to Renarin. I was like, yeah, that tells me maybe you're not going anywhere, mate. See how we go.
Interesting. It's like, yeah, no, you're fine.
Now that you've said goodbye, we'll see.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. You said it from the start. We just... We got a cliffhanger here.
And sure.
It's kind of a cliffhanger in more ways than one for more than one character when we get to the end here, because there's different people trying to decide what on earth they're going to do. So.
Yep.
It's the best kind of chapter to end on, right?
It is very Sandalanchy. It's good.
That's a fair point. It does feel very much par for the course. Yep. Classic us.
Classic stripe.
Fruit stripe? Fruit stripe gum?
No, not that kind of stripe. Sorry.
Nope.
Oh, did you watch The Sign?
Yes, heartbreaking.
Oh man, yeah, it was a thing.
Oh yeah, it was devastating.
They managed to do
a
lot.
Oh yeah, we were crying.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I was talking to somebody and I was just like, I shouldn't be surprised given how much they put into a normal like 7-minute episode that they managed to squeeze so much content into this like triple length episode, but it got me.
Yep.
Okay, now that we've taken that Bluey side trip.
Well, Bluey story hits you hard, huh?
Yeah.
Many of them do.
They do. Yeah, like really. Before these two new episodes came out, the last one was, what was it? Was
it the cricket one?
Cricket, yes. Mm. And that one I felt was really emotional. I was like, oh, that's so.
Yeah. Oh, like so many episodes will just hit you like a ton of bricks and you won't see it coming.
Yeah.
So is could we say that Bluey's being emotionally manipulative, like to generate like viewership? Is this a negative thing?
No, absolutely not. It's just incredibly well written.
Yeah.
Because there are like those soap opera-y shows like now. I'll give you. I don't watch the show, but an example of it is This Is Us. It's like the whole point of the show is just to emotionally manipulate you into feeling sad, or like crying, or like having a deep emotion.
How dare you make me feel things? Exactly. Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody.
No. Bluey is just a show that it's for preschoolers, but doesn't shy away from topics that you know. No, preschoolers will feel sad about these topics, but it's ones they're going to encounter in real life. So let's give them something to connect with.
Yeah, it all feels very true to life.
Yeah.
Which is, well, for the most part anyway. I mean, like, you could, like, fairies. shit gets weird. But anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Let's move back to this book.
For the Australian Aussies, there's a lot of nostalgia. It's very much out.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense, too.
I could talk about Bluey for literal hours, so.
Well, it's, like, there's stuff that's clearly supposed to be nostalgic, but that I can't relate to. Like, when they play Pass the Parcel, and I'm just like, I've never played that when I was a kid, so it doesn't.
Yeah, hit. Yeah. Mm. That's fair.
Pass the Parcel? No, we don't really do that here.
Oh, okay.
Although, after that episode, I've considered it for the kid's next birthday party.
That is
so. Go ahead, Jamie.
No, I just think that is a staple at a party.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely for us.
Yeah. I feel like we have so many different cultures that do different things at parties. Like, in the U.S., like, there's so many different party games that people get overwhelmed, so they just, like, pick the one they like and stick with it.
You know, we're from Texas. Pinatas.
Pinatas are pretty standard. At parties here, not for adults.
A kid's birthday party.
Yeah, kid's birthday party.
Kin the Tail on the Donkey?
No. Yep. I mean, I've seen it done.
We did it at the boys' last party, except it was they had a Scooby Doo themed party, so it was like it was stickers, and you stick the Scooby Doo tag. You're supposed to get it around his collar or whatever. It was cute.
So please tell me at the Scooby Doo party that the pinata was Scrappy.
I don't think we did a pinata that year. I don't recall.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing from everyone is that with episode 200, we want to turn this into a Bluey podcast instead of a Brandon Sanderson podcast.
The listeners
podcast.
Agree, but
let's throw
as Dak said, you could be talked about for hours. There's so much there. Okay, let's. Speaking of this book that we're reading right now, we'll go into chapter 63, which was Fear,
aka The Way of Bluey.
And the epigraph here is, I wish to sleep. I know now why you do what you do, and I hate you for it. I will not speak of the truths I see. And this was a Shin sailor left behind by his crew, reportedly for bringing them ill luck. Sample largely useless.
He also knows why they're sad.
But this is interesting. He's what he is saying is like he's talking to someone and saying, I know why you do what you do, and I hate you for it. I'm not going to tell you what I'm seeing, which brings I guess there's two possibilities there. That could be like, the crazy shit that he says before he dies, or he's saying, no, I won't say that stuff that they usually say because of you, person I'm talking to, or symbol head guy, whoever he's talking to. So like that puts a different spin on what on these things, potentially anyway. So just something weird about that one.
I wonder if it's the fact to do with he's a Shin, because Shinovar is not affected by the high storms, so we theorize that maybe the shards have less power there.
Yeah, it's not as affected because they're surrounded by the mountains.
Yeah, so maybe the Shin are less susceptible to whatever this all is because of that.
Interesting thought, yeah. That allows him to resist.
Yeah.
But he's talking to somebody here and being like, I'm not going to do it. So either, I don't know, maybe he can just see the symbol heads and he's like, screw you guys.
He's like, yeah, Hoyt, I'm not going to do it. Leave me alone.
Hoyt is the one collecting all these.
Go sing a song, play on your flute. Get out of here.
He didn't have flute anymore. He gave it up.
He could have another flute. You don't know.
That's true. He's got like a whole pack of them.
It's quite good even before he gave it up.
And so we go into the chapter and Layton, one of the bridgemen, is apparently used to be an armorer's apprentice, and so he's helping create armor for these out of the Parshendi armor, so that the Bridgemen can wear them, just like Kaladin did in the previous section. And he says he can have all five additional suits done by the end of the night, probably. And it's he also disses how Kaladin did. He's like, it's a wonder this didn't fall apart with what a crappy job you did. But whatever, it worked. And we find out a little about the carapace armor that they've been cutting off the Parshendi. He says it's nearly as hard as steel, but half the weight. Hard to cut or break, but if you drill, it shapes easily. So that's kind of interesting.
Pretty cool.
And so then Kaladin's like, oh, you can finish five in one day? Well, good, because I want all of us to have armor. Every guy in Bridge 4, well, except for Shen, he doesn't get any because he would not wear that.
I like how it's like, yeah, Shen's not even coming on bridge runs anymore. He's just done.
Yeah, he won't even look at Kaladin now. So Mittal had agreed to let them leave him behind.
Poor guy.
And they're going to have some of the wounded men that Bridge 4 has been taking care of help him with making the armor. So get it all done. And Kaladin's like, how did an apprentice armorer end up a bridgeman? And he's like, look, when a piece of armor breaks and a light eye takes an arrow because of it, someone has to take the blame. I'm convinced my master keeps an extra apprentice, especially for those situations. Which, damn, that's harsh.
It's really clever, but it's still a dick move.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It is both of those things.
Yep.
And we get a little bit of them practicing spear stuff. Gap-toothed Hobber, he had to correct that guy's stance. Some of these guys, like Leighton and Hobber here, I'm like, have we met them before? I don't even recall at this point.
Leighton, definitely. I don't know about Hobber.
Mm.
I remember them talking about Hobber's gap tooth before.
Oh, okay. Scar and Moash are the most skilled with the spear stuff they've learned so far. Moash, in particular, is quite good. Dak's favorite guy. He's the best.
We all know how I feel, and I have thoughts for the end of the episode.
Okay, fair enough. I do like that Kaladin has to have a little chat with Moash about, like, look, man, you're pushing yourself too hard. It's good that you're so dedicated, but you can't push yourself that hard or you're going to burn out. And he even, like, opens up a little bit. Says, look, I lost someone and because I wasn't good enough, and I nearly killed myself practicing to get better. And he tells Moash, it's maybe the first person he's told, that it's like, yeah, my brother got killed. And Moash is like, yeah, okay. And we find out Moash's, and maybe this is what Dak has some predicaments on for the end of the episode. Moash reveals his purpose in being here is he has somebody that he wants to kill. And he won't tell Kaladin who, but he's like, look, I'd given up on my murder plans, but you've given me back my goal in life.
I don't think that's what he says. I don't think he says murder plans.
Well, he'd surrender his plans.
Yeah, Moash, oof. Who knows what's going on with this guy? He's like, oh yeah, I'm angry. And they're like, angry enough to kill? He's like, yeah.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm angry enough to do. He wants to kill someone, and he's like, I've surrendered my plans, but you've returned them to me. I will guard you with my life, Kaladin. I swear it by the blood of my fathers. It's very dramatic. As long as it's not Kaladin he wants to kill, it's all good.
You probably would have done it by now if it was Kaladin.
One would think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's Gaz. Maybe that's power? Why Gaz isn't here.
Yeah.
I come all this way to get Gaz. But now Moash and Gaz were kind of buddies or something at one point, I feel like.
Unless that was the rug pull like Sadeus and Dalinar.
Yeah. Oh.
He's like, Gaz, we're buddies, right? Guess what? You're dead.
And so then Kaladin gets in a conversation with Rock where he's just like, Sadeus is never going to let us go now. I mean, everyone knows who we are. We're prominent because we've taken this new role of, like, dancing monkeys to attract arrows. So he can't let us get away at this point. And apparently they have come up with a plan. Rock's like, no, we talked about this. We'll kill the men he sends after us. We'll go to Carbranth, where there are no slaves. And then from there, we'll go to the peaks, where my people will welcome us as heroes.
Carbranth is probably a good option. We know they've got, like, the free hospitals there, so, like, mm-hmm. if they get injured on the way out, they can get patched up. The king's is a really good bloke, so he'd probably welcome them in. Maybe some of them can stay there, and then, yeah, people can move on as they need to. Carbranth is a good option.
Yeah, although I guess it depends. Like, we know that Yasna is in a good position there. If she gets word from her brother or her uncle, if the, you know, if the betrayal hadn't happened. But if she got word from like Elokard's like, yeah, Sadeas like is mad because these guys escaped and now they're there, she might be able to talk the king into handing them over.
Nah, maybe. That's if like, you know, the world is a big place. Most worlds are. And like
most worlds, yeah.
The odds of them like showing up and being and them being able to identify this is that group that escaped from the shattered planes. Like those seem like pretty long odds.
But it does bring up an interesting possibility. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you, but we've talked about how Joe in particular, I think, although I think everybody has said it to some degree, has doubted that they're actually going to escape. And part of that is like, well, basically Kaladin is leaving the main story if he runs off somewhere else.
Mm.
But if he leaves this part of the main story to move into another part of the main story, maybe it actually works.
And with Shallan? Nah. We're
done. Like Shallan and or Yasin.
We're never going to see Shallan again. It's over.
Yeah, maybe. She's done. Game over, man.
Screwed, man. She's screwed.
And then we get Teft telling Kaladin, like, hey, it'll be good for the men's morale if you, like, show them a thing or two with the spear. Like, with a real spear with an actual head on it. Like, show them what you can do. And Kaladin does not want to do it. He's like, don't worry. I'll fight when the time comes. But I can't let myself get into it now. And Teft's like, you're scared of it. I can see it. And he's like, okay, yeah, I am. But, you know, and Teft's like, fine. But when the time comes, I hope you're ready. And that's the end of the chapter. But we do get a map of the Battle of the Tower drawn by Navani Colin, which is an interesting little map. I don't know. Can you read it?
We don't get asked till after the next chapter.
Oh, interesting. I feel like it makes more sense there. Than it does here. I'm just trying to blow it up a little bit to see if I can actually read what it says. But we can get into it then. Okay, yeah, we'll just go. It is weird how we have ended up with illustrations in different places from y'all a couple of times now.
Yeah, that's confusing.
Okay, 64, A Man of Extremes. And this one is an epigraph I find interesting. It's in some ways one of the more upbeat ones that we've seen. Although it's still kind of... unpleasant, where it's like, they come from the pit, two dead men, a heart in their hands, and I know that I have seen true glory. Which, just, it's phrased in an upbeat way, but then you look at the words of it, and you're like, oh, that's extremely disturbing, actually.
Yeah. Not great.
Doesn't sound good.
But true glory, how can that not be good? It's fair, okay. And we come into Navani and Dalinar taking a little walk together, and kind of discussing the history of their relationship, where she was like, I can never tell if you were interested or not. And apparently he's the one who introduced Navani to Gavilar. And Gavilar thought that it was like, hey, here's a woman for you to be interested in, when in reality Dalinar was interested in her. But once his brother expressed a preference for her, Dalinar just stepped aside.
It's like, hey, meet my girlfriend. He's like, oh, girlfriend, you say? I guess that's my girlfriend, is what you meant when you said your girlfriend.
You had your turn.
And we get into a thing where he's like, I didn't realize what I had done in giving you to him. And she's like, wait, excuse me? Do you see a slave brand on this forehead?
It's like, yeah, dude, ex-nay, ex-nay.
The genie from Aladdin's going, mayday, mayday!
Yeah, exactly. That was what I was picturing, too.
Find a different word. One that doesn't sound the way that you said it.
But, she kind of lets it go, and she's like, did you always step aside for him, or did you often step aside for him? And Dalinar says, yeah, always.
Yeah.
I didn't really think about it much. Gavilar just had that force of will, that air of natural entitlement.
Ugh.
It's an interesting description of his. It always seemed to surprise him when someone denied him, or when the world itself didn't do as he wished.
He's like, wait, I just asked you to do that, or I just told you to do that, and you're not going to do it?
I don't understand the words that I'm hearing.
Hey, can you bring me a glass of water? No? Wait, what? Why?
What? This word you're saying? No, I'm not familiar with that term. What does that mean?
Can you have a dictionary read to us so that we can
learn? Is that like yes, but like later? Or...
And so Dalinar kind of explains, like, she's like, I thought you hated me. But he just, because he realized that he couldn't be with her, he had to hold himself apart and kind of remain aloof to stop his feelings from coming through. And then Navani's like, oh, well, I mean, it looked like hatred to me. But then, of course, came along. And we find out, as somebody mentioned earlier, it's not just that he has no memories of his wife. When he hears her name spoken, it, like, doesn't connect. It just sounds like nothing, or it sounds like this sound.
He just gets, like, TV static in his ears.
Yeah.
He's like, what the? Oh, yeah. They must have said her name.
Oh, you know what it is. It's the Hypnotoad sound.
Hypnotoad.
So that, I mean, we knew that he'd forgotten her, but somehow that seems even meaner. Like, you can't even hear her name. So he literally doesn't know her name, and no one can tell him.
You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
And Navani's like, you truly seem to love her. And Dalinar's like, I did. And then he thinks, I mean, I must have, right? Probably? I don't know.
I think so.
And so he's like, hey, you know what? Why don't you tell me what you thought of her, Navani? Since I can't discuss this at all. And so we get kind of our first impression of, we don't know her name either. We just hear shh as well. So whoever she was, Navani says that, I tried hard to hate her, but in the end, I could only be mildly jealous. Nobody could hate her. She never made inappropriate comments, never bullied those around her, always calm. Just so nice that you couldn't hate her. And then she's like, I mean, but she wasn't. And she kind of feels guilty about saying it because this is the guy's dead wife you're talking about. It's like, I mean, she just wasn't really clever.
She wasn't dumb, but she wasn't smart.
She wasn't cunning. Maybe that was part of her charm. So she wasn't one of those plotters like the other women in the Alethi court. And so I guess to someone like Navani, that would seem like a weakness. To someone like Dalinar, that might actually be a selling point.
I was going to say, like, already she sounds great compared to some of the other characters we've met.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, imagine, we don't even know Sadeus' first name. We don't know if he has a wife, but I was just thinking, imagine the Alethi women are supposed to be like these political plotters. With Sadeus is kind of that sort of guy already. What kind of wife would he have? Like, would she be just five times worse?
I don't know. Does Sadeus have a family? Like,
we don't know.
Like, Dalinar and Gabalar both like, where he's, like, roughly the same age as him, and they've both got adult kids. Does Sadeus have an heir? Mm-hmm.
We know, like, so little about Sadeus in a personal sense.
I'm gonna guess he doesn't, but it'd be interesting to, like, think he's, like, Macbeth, and there's, like, a Lady Macbeth who's, like, way worse.
Yeah.
Or he has a Macbeth Jr. out there.
Yeah. Macbeth, like, light.
Or, yeah, like, it's like Macbeth worse. Like, Sadeus was the rough copy, and his kid is the final draft.
Macbeth zero. It's actually worse than regular.
With how much we've seen of him, it's weird to think about how little we know. We don't even know if Sadeus is his first or last name, or if, as we discussed before, it's just like Cher. He's just Sadeus.
He's just Sadeus. Yeah, it's his stage name.
Yeah,
his real name's actually just Edward.
Edward. It's Bob.
Bob. Sadeus.
It's Doug. Wouldn't that be
Douglas Sad?
I was going to say Carl. Yeah. Wait, no, that was the Inquisitor.
Yeah,
that was the Inquisitor. You're right.
Doug,
we had a Carl. Sadeus. Can't have another one. And so they get into more of a discussion about, like, this relationship. Like, what are we doing here? And Navani wants to go forward, and Dalinar kind of agrees that they're going to try to be together, but also, he feels very guilty about all of this because this is against his personal, you know, code, essentially.
It's really icky to find the relationship talk.
And he tells her, she's like, can't you just let it go a little bit? And he says that, no, like, deep down, I am really a weak person. I have to have all of these, like, boundaries, because if I let myself go even a little bit, I could go all the way back to this person that I used to be. A man I never want to be again. And then he thinks, a man who'd contemplated murdering his own brother for the throne and for the woman who had married that brother. So, yeah, that's okay.
You got to give him points for his self-awareness.
That's fair. Yep. He's like, I know who I am inside, and I know that I can't let myself go. And she says, you're not weak. And I really like his response, where he's like, I am, but weakness can imitate strength if bound properly, just as cowardice can imitate heroism if given nowhere to flee. That's a really interesting thought, I feel like. Oh, and then as they're discussing this, the bells start sounding, and they must have a code or something, because he recognizes, like, that's the tower. One of the plateaus Sadeas has been watching. High Princes have failed every time to win a gem heart there. It'll be a major victory if we do it together. And Navani says, you're right about him. We do need him for our cause, but keep him at arm's length. And as he leaves, he's like, oh my gosh, she said, like, our cause.
What?
She'd already started to think of them as together in their efforts, and he realized so did he. So that's a cute moment for this relationship that's kind of icky. So
is it cute, though?
Or terrible? Like,
yeah, I feel like it's just terrible. I feel like Jamie and I are on the same team here. Like, just stop the Dalinani relationship, the Navaninar.
Start couple name them.
That we got to stop it. The only way there's not a couple name is if we stop them.
Davani. Yeah, it's a tough one too. I don't know.
I'm at the point where it's like, I want Dalinar to be happy, but not with her.
I want you to be happy, but just not with that person. Can't you happiness be happy will not a last. Different way?
Can't you be happy with Moash, Dalinar?
Yeah, you just don't understand football, Dalinar. That's the problem.
A relationship with Moash is going to get very stabby.
Yeah. Maybe. Just watch some footy, hang out, smoke a J, and calm down.
And so we cut to the lumberyard where the bridgemen are getting ready now that the alarm sounded. And as they're all bridge force putting their armor on, and, you know, they got their shields with the Parshendi bones. And as they form up, like, all of the other bridge crews start applauding them. And Teft's like, oh, okay, that's new. And Calvin's like, I guess they finally realize what we are. We're their champions. Bridge forward.
Well, they're champions. They're just the guys who would get shot at.
Yeah, it's true.
Praise the guys who draw the fire.
I mean, the guys who risk themselves so that we can live. That's pretty, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't doubt they're genuinely appreciative, but it's not because they're champions. It's because they're drawing the fire.
Decoys.
So it's right there in the name, decoy.
And then we cut to Adolin, who's he's just contemplating as he gets his armor strapped on. It's like, my dad's not crazy. Like, this is a new feeling for me. I've been sure for so long that he was going nuts. And so he has to think about it, and he goes, you know what? I'm glad that I was wrong and my dad's not crazy.
Yeah, I feel like that's a pretty normal thing to feel. Man, I sure am glad my dad's not crazy.
But then he has to think, like, okay, but that means these visions are real? So he's like some sort of prophet? That's weird. That's a new thing to have to consider.
The prophet Jeremadic.
I just want to point out, this is the point where you can tell shit's about to go down, because we're in one chapter and it's shifted through three different characters' perspectives.
True that.
And so they start forming up their army, and then Sadeas shows up, and Adolin's like, geez, Dad, what's he doing here? Like, come on, he shouldn't be with his own dudes.
Son, we work with him.
And so Sadeas rides up, and he's like, hey, we need lots of troops. If you got everybody together, everybody you could scrape together right now, how many men could you pull together? And Dalinar says, like 8,000. And Sadeas says, okay, well, I've gotten 10,000 together. If we take them all...
Seven.
So yeah, Sadeas has 7. Dalinar has 8. If we put them all together, then we can destroy the Parshendi. We'll show them what we can really do.
Going through that now, after knowing what we know at the end, that's just like, oh, crap.
Yeah, right? You're like, there's a reason Sadeas is like, hey, if you brought, like, just all the guys you could possibly bring, how many would that be? And it's like, oh, you bastard.
You sweet genius bastard.
And then Sadeas is like, we have to attack together, though, all at the same time. And Dalinar's like, no, Luke, I'm not gonna risk lives on those on your bridges. And Sadeas is like, oh no, I've got a new way of using bridgemen, one that doesn't have nearly casualties have dropped to almost nothing. And Dalinar's like, oh really? Is it because of, like, those bridgemen with the armor? What made you change your mind? And he's like, oh, maybe what you've been saying is getting through to me, dude. Which
is just like the rock science approach that armor might have helped save lives.
Who would have thought? It's revolutionary, really.
If we put something on them that could stop the arrows, they might get hurt. Huh.
Yeah. Everybody wins.
But Sadeus is just such a little shit that he takes credit for this new approach to stuff. And it's like, oh, yeah, maybe you're just rubbing off on me, Dalinar, that I came up with this new idea.
He's King Julian with it. This is my genius plan all by myself. We've been watching a lot of Madagascar lately. Sorry, folks.
Nice. It's been a long time since I've seen Madagascar.
Sadeus, did you get your shot plate? Yes, it has a gecko on it.
I don't know if they have lizards on Roshar. I don't know that we've heard about any of those. They have
crabs. Probably have some kind of, they'll have some kind of crab lizard.
They have chickens and crabs and...
Sure. As you do.
Horses.
Crab gecko.
Crab people. And so that's the end of that chapter. Adolin's actually at the end of the chapter like, no, come on, Dad, agree. We need to hit the Parshendi hard. Like, he's all for Sadeus's plan.
Adolin's agreeing with Sadeus. Shit's definitely about to go down. Yeah.
And so then we have the tower. And the epigraph is, I see them. They are the rocks. They are the vengeful spirits, eyes of red. And this is from a dark-eyed young woman of 15. Subject was reportedly mentally unstable since childhood.
Okay, that one's concerning.
Yeah, maybe.
Because Eyes of Red, that was Autonomy's deal, wasn't it?
Autonomy had the army with the men of red and gold or whatever. I think there were some... Oh, yeah, whenever like she gave powers to people, or they had the red eyes, right?
Yeah. So yeah. It's like, oh, great, we've got Odium already to deal with, and now Autonomy's going to show up as well.
Maybe. Maybe red eyes are just all the mean shards that we don't like.
Unusually distinct sign of evil.
Yeah, right. Although, really, what it made me think of when it says subject reportedly mentally unstable since childhood, I was like, Ruin always was able to talk to people who are mentally unstable. Does that make you more susceptible to other kinds of, other shard interference? Or was that just a Ruin thing? Because that's how he talked to, supposedly, like, convinced Zane to spike himself.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
And convinced Vin's mom to spike Vin as a baby. Because Vin's mom was nuts.
Vin's mom wasn't spiked?
No, I don't think so. I think she was just insane.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She's pretty crazy.
And so we cut to, we're still with Dalinar. But now, although I guess technically that last section was an Adolin section. It was just, he hung out with Dalinar. So Dalinar and his army have reached the tower. And the Parshendi are already there trying to get the Gemheart out. But they haven't gotten it out yet, so it's time to go. And we find out that the chasms here are too wide for Dalinar and Adolin to do their usual thing of jumping across to establish like a beachhead. Very convenient that also means they're too wide for Dalinar and Adolin to escape later on. Almost too wide for the bridges, in fact, but not quite. And they've brought at least 10,000 Parshendi, which they've decided that's like maybe, I forget what they say, if that's like a third or a quarter of what they think the Parshendi have left in total forces. So they're like, if we can destroy these 10,000 Parshendi, then that this could turn the war right here today. Which, I must say, also makes what Sadeus did even shittier, because it's like, here was their opportunity to, like, maybe win the war. And for Sadeus, it was a bigger priority to screw somebody else over.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to win the war.
Maybe not.
I think he wants to continue warring till the end of time. Because he obviously has no care for, like, sanctity of, like, preserving life, because he's just letting these bridgemen go to their doom. Enjoying the fact that they're doing it, even so, like, I don't think it's a big priority for him to keep these people alive.
Yeah, I would agree with this. I don't think he cares about anybody that's not him. And Dalinar still refuses to, like, use bridgemen, have them under fire so that he can get there. He says it's part of the codes. Don't do anything you wouldn't. Don't force your men to do anything that you would not do yourself. And he's like, I would not run one of these bridges. And Sadeus is like, okay, fine. We're still gonna have dinner tonight, right? To talk about strategy. So he's laying it on kind of thick to make it seem like everything is normal. And Dalinar considers the possibility of a second Parshendi army showing up, but he's like, no, I think that we'll still have, given the positioning of on this plateau, I think we're still in a good shape, even if that happens. And we cut to Kaladin, who's doing his dance, It says Kaladin danced with the wind. And arrows flying all around him. Sorry, go ahead.
Hang on. Before we go, but let's go back to Dalinar for a second, because he's looking at the bridges and he's only just figured out that, like, oh, that armor looks kind of like Parshendi carapace. Like, hang on. What did you think was happening?
I mean, if he was so far away that he couldn't quite see it, he might have just been like, oh, I can tell that they're wearing some kind of armor. Although, I guess it'd be like orange armor or something.
So. Yeah, but he saved them. He rode by and saved them. So he would have seen it.
Although it was only Kaladin that had the armor. Kaladin may have taken it off by that point when they got saved.
I think he had, but like, didn't he question at any point? It's like, well, why does this one dude with armor draw the attention of the entire Parshendi armor? What's up with that? Did you just think, oh, that one Bridgman has armor and the Parshendi got offended by that? Like, no. Come on, Dalinar. Think for a minute.
I guess we don't know how closely he's paid attention. He's noticed that there are some Bridgmen with armor now. Whether he's been watching closely during the bridge assault, because usually what happens is his group shows up later. Like, Sadeas gets there faster, and Dalinar shows up after the battle has already started. So he may have missed the dancing almost entirely before now.
I grant, but this seems like the thing that has changed Sadeas's entire strategy. Well, not his entire strategy, but like his attitude towards bridge crews, which is something that was a point of contention for Dalinar for a long time. Mm-hmm. I feel like he would have just gone, can we find out why that is? Like, why all of a sudden this one crew was allowed armor, this one dude on this crew was allowed armor, and why that pissed off the Parshendi so much? These are all things it seems like Dalinar would be interested in, and is like, actually, no, fuck it, I'm too busy, like, dating Navani.
Well, Dalinar does ask Sadeas in this section, like, why'd you change your mind and allow this?
Yeah, but, like, it seems like he's doing it now, he didn't do this at all before.
Yeah. So he's also looking at the framework of trusting his friend. So he's on and figuring out if he's trusting Sadeas, and he's a little bit preoccupied. Like, he's not in that frame of mind that Sadeas is possibly doing something wrong.
Yeah.
So now is probably the time to start to, and like, it started out with one guy in some armor, and then it's been a couple of guys in some armor, and now it's got them all in armor. So it's been a gradual thing.
I guess that's fair. Like, the thing that sticks out in my mind is the fact that it pissed off the Parshendi, and that's the sort of thing that would spread among the armies. People would talk about that. So, considering how interested Dalinar is in the Parshendi, I find it surprising that hasn't reached him. But,
I mean, Kaladin has been the talk of the armies for a while now after being put out in the High Storm. Like, Sadeas' soldiers are risking punishment to come and, like, stare at him. So you think that might have gotten around, too.
Yeah.
Maybe Dalinar doesn't pay enough attention to the camp gossip.
Maybe it's a case of within Sadeas' army, it's like, oh, you know, gossip within the army is one thing, but gossiping to other armies, especially Dalinar's, like, you will be. I guess that could be it.
That's a good point. Okay, yeah, but we jump to Kaladin, who is he's dodging the arrows, taunting the Parshendi, and he still takes time to notice. It's like, they've got 32 bridges and thousands of men. Like, we've brought a lot of dudes this time. And they get the bridges set. They get the army going across. And then he notices that once again, Sadeas' forces are making an opening for Dalinar's bridges to get set. And he's just like, oh, yeah, maybe that's just how Dalinar's protecting his squeaky clean image. I'm not going to let Bridgman die. Yeah, not directly, at least. Never mind that he stood on the backs of the men who had fallen to get Sadeas across. Their corpses were his true bridge. That's a metaphor. Although it makes me think of the corpse boat. Good old Spanky. But
Spanky.
I mean, Kaladin, I feel like, is not wrong there. That it's really splitting the hair fine to be like, for Dalinar to be like, no, I won't risk men running those bridges, but I'll let you do it to make a landing area for me to then use bridges.
Yeah. He's like, I don't want to see the bridgemen die, but it's fine if you do it.
Although he also can't stop Sadeas from doing it. So, like...
Yeah, he's tried.
People expect this, yeah. So, him do it.
They've had 6 bridge runs without a casualty. So that's nice. Except now Scar has been hit. And Scar's like, an arrow in the freaking foot. Who gets shot in the foot? And then arrow. Teft has also taken an arrow. His in the shoulder. Right in, like, the space between his two pieces of armor. And so Kaladin is treating Teft and Scar, everyone else is good. And this is when the first kind of inklings that something is wrong pop up, where Rock is like, Sadeus is keeping all of his men like real close, so no Parshendi can get through. That sounds like a good thing, but it foreshadows something. And after Sadeus, we cut to Dalinar, who Sadeus has made him a foothold. So he's like, bridge, one of you bridges, follow me. He's getting eager to take this plateau, and gets his shard blade out and starts just like, you know, slicing his way through the Parshendi as usual. And he wants to know where the Parshendi shard bearers are. He hasn't fought one in a long time. He saw one in that battle some weeks ago, but it's been a long time since he's fought one. Why would they commit 10,000 men here without sending a shard bearer? The Parshendi have a new approach to trying to take out the shard bearer, which is they have the guys with big slings, like throwing rocks to smash him, break the armor that way. And it's somewhat effective until Dalinar manages to slice his way up there and climb the rocks and kill them all. Also, I do like the image of he gets up there, he finds the rocks that they're using, and he grabs a couple and just like chucks them at some of the other guys with slings. It says hard enough to toss them off the formation, crushing their chests. So he's just like baseballing these head-sized rocks hard enough to like break them, break the Parshendi.
Pretty nuts. Like the action in this scene is just phenomenal.
This is another one of those, like, this would be like some epic Lord of the Rings sort of action moments to see on film.
Yeah.
Funny you mentioned Lord of the Rings, because I was definitely getting like Theoden vibes when he's starting to bellow to the army, and I was like, oh yeah, here you go. This is that moment. Definitely.
I can see that, yeah. And so he says, he's getting into it. He starts yelling, he's like, press them, pass the word, all companies up the side of the tower. And he's getting so into the battle, he's grinning and just like loving this. He says, this was life. This was control. Gavilar had been the leader, but Dalinar had been the warrior. His opponents had surrendered to Gavilar's rule, but the Blackthorn was the man who scattered them, the one who dueled their leaders and slain their best shard bearers. Old Dalinar, the Blackthorn, sounds like a scary dude, I have to say.
Yeah, you don't mess around that Blackthorn.
But then, as he's about to kill a guy, he realizes that this particular Parshendi is like super young. Says he's only a youth. And suddenly all of that, like that feeling of like disgust at what is happening starts coming back in, and the thrill vanishes. And he's like, what am I doing? Like, Gavilar was assassinated 6 years ago. This guy was like a little kid then. Yeah. He doesn't have time to think about that too much though, because one of his cobalt guardsmen comes by and just like shoves a sword into that kid's neck and it's done. But this is that moment in the battle where Dalinar starts to look around and go, what are we doing? This is horrifying. And he has to fight with himself. Like, but they killed Gavilar. And then he hears that unite them. He starts thinking, oh, I'm supposed to unite them. Roshar had been united once. Had that included the Parshendi? Like, are these some of the people that I'm supposed to unite? Because we're not doing that. He's been taking unite them to mean the high princes, to unite Alethkar. But all of a sudden he's like, I mean, is it more than that? But also, I still don't know where these visions are from. And while he's growing sicker and sicker of what's going on, all of a sudden he hears Adolin frantically shouting. And Adolin's like, what do we do? And Dalinar's like, about what? And he points, and there's another army, another Parshendi army that's leaping across the chasm. And Dalinar's like, why did the scouts not alert us to this? And then he scrambles up to look, and he sees what's happening. Sadeus's army is retreating across the bridges back to the staging plateau. Half of them are already gone. And the 8 groups of bridgemen that Sadeus had lent to Dalinar have pulled back and disappeared. Sadeus was abandoning Dalinar and his troops, leaving them surrounded by Parshendi, and he was taking all of his bridges with him. Which could have been the place that we ended this section. That would have been a nicely dramatic moment. But we did one more chapter. And the epigraph here is that chanting, that singing, those rasping voices. Which that one sounds to me like it could be about the Parshendi. We know that they sing while they're fighting. I don't know if they sound raspy, though, so maybe it's something else.
I mean, Dal and I was just talking about him singing as they died.
It's true. This one from a middle-aged Potter reported seeing strange dreams during high storms during the last 2 years. So, wow, okay. Was he seeing the same dreams? Was some random Potter getting the message that he needed to unite them?
This is the one that piqued my interest because I was like, hang on a minute, we know someone going through this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's interesting. I don't know what it all means yet, but it's interesting.
Right? Yeah, it makes me very curious. Like, are there different messages that people can get from these, like, visions during the high storms? Or is he seeing all the same stuff that Dalinar is seeing? But, and if so, like, how is a Potter supposed to unite them?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
with artwork.
Yeah.
Shallan is seeing some weird stuff. It's not through the high storm specifically, but she's definitely going through some stuff and getting, well, I don't know that she's getting a message yet. She's terrified, which is fair.
Yeah, she's had whatever these things are talk to her a little bit, but they said stuff like, yes, it's true that you're scared, or
yeah, like, or, duh, I know.
What are you, I think, is the first thing they said. So not the most deep messages that she's getting. We cut back to Kaladin, who's just finishing treating Scar's arrow wound to his foot when he looks up and realizes, like, oh, like, Sadeas is retreating. At first, it seemed so impossible that Kaladin couldn't accept it. Like, are they just, like, bringing around for another attack? No, the rear guard's already across the bridges. And he thinks, like, or somebody asks, do you think Sadeas died? Why would the whole army be retreating? And Cal's like, no, I mean, his banner still flies, so he's probably not dead.
Could you imagine if that was the case? Like, Sadeas actually just died off screen, we'd missed it, and they just see him carrying his body back over the bridge, and we all just go, oh, shit, okay.
That would be kind of hilarious, actually. I don't think that I'd hate that. And then it's like Sadeas's heretofore unknown heir, who's like, abandons Dalinar on the field.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we just never talked about it before. His son's been there the whole time.
Yeah, Dougie Sadeas Jr.
Dougie Sads.
That's his rapper name.
And, like, Kaladin goes and catches sight of Sadeas riding up. He's like, no, he looks okay. And it takes him a minute to realize what's going on. They're abandoning him. This was a trap, a setup. Sadeas is leaving High Prince Colin and all of his soldiers to die. And Kaladin, he still can't believe it, to the point that he, like, pushes his way up to get a close look at Sadeas to make sure that, you know, he's not hurt or anything. And then he's just stunned. He's like, this is a betrayal that makes even Amaram's betrayal of me seem trivial. And Kaladin is close enough to hear Sadeas kind of look back at Dalinar and say, I told you, old friend, I said that honor of yours would get you killed someday. Which, I mean, geez, you gotta just rub that shit in, apparently.
Sadeas, you said the quiet part loud. Just in case Kaladin wasn't sure if this was, like, what this was or not, you had to just, like, yep, there it is.
Yep. You just got to confirm for Kaladin that you are just a complete piece of shit. Not that Kaladin doubted that, I feel like, but we were starting to doubt it, so had to confirm for us, too. And Dalinar and Adolin are up here fighting with their army, but with really no hope, because even if they could somehow beat a Parshendi army that's potentially more than twice as big as their own army, they would have no way of getting back. So they're just screwed. And on their Adolin and Dalinar, their plate has already started, like, cracking a whole bunch. So things are not going great, which once again just deepens how shitty Sadeas's move is, because he is handing over two sets of shard plate and shard blades to the enemy of his country in order to facilitate this betrayal. And Adolin's like, I warned you not to trust him, which I feel like if Dalinar could read Adolin's mind earlier, when Adolin's like, oh, we totally, please agree to this, Dad. Sadeas is right. We can kill so many Parshendi here. Like, Adolin has no room right now to be like, I told you not to trust him. Because while it's true, you were also all in on this.
Totally an Adolin move, though.
It is. You're not wrong.
That thing I thought about 10 minutes ago that was different than the opposite of how I feel now, you should have known that.
And so Aelin is just using their last moments on Roshar to tell his dad, I told you so. And Dalinar's like, I know. And then Adolin has to elucidate, like, we walked right into this. We let him take away our bridges. We let him get us out onto the plateau, blah, blah, blah. And Dalinar's like, yes, I know.
Is this like, really, you know, we're standing in the same battle, right? Like, come on.
And I love that because of how the Alethi, like, nobility works, he's like, the people who matter are going to know what actually happened here. But Sadeus has set this up in a way where he has plausible deniability to be like, oh, no, it was horrible. We had to leave and they got killed. Oh, no.
Yeah. And it honestly reminds me of a story by R.A. Salvatore told in the Forgotten Realms. It's like the whole Dark Elf like society is like they secretly try to kill one another. But if they get found out that they kill one another, then they get in trouble with like the elders. But everybody kind of knows that's what happens, that the other like families take each other out. And they're just like, well, as long as you don't get caught, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually pretty much exactly what he's saying here. He's very cutthroat. And so he's like, yeah, no one's going to say anything. The only one who might maybe say something is Elokar. And like Sadeus and Dalinar are his two closest advisors. So without Dalinar, Sadeus is his closest advisor. So he's much less likely to speak out against Sadeus. And he's even thinking like, I saved your life, Sadeus. Like not long ago, Dalinar risked himself to save Sadeus's life. And here's what you get. No good deed goes unpunished.
Sadeus is like, I don't remember that. Possibly the concussion.
Well, I mean, it could be. But they just know, like, okay, this is the end. There's no way for us to get out of this. And Dalinar's just telling Adolin, like, this is all my fault. I should never have risked our house for those foolish dreams. And Adolin's like, no, it's not your fault. Even though I just finished saying I told you so, like, 15 times, it's not your fault.
Yeah, he actually took a moment to stop and think about it. It's like, oh, maybe I said the wrong thing.
Yeah, credit where credit.
Yeah. And Aelin's like, what would you have done differently? Would you be like Sadeus? No, I wouldn't want you to be that guy. I wish that we hadn't let Sadeus trick us, but I'm not going to blame you for what he did. You're right to follow the codes. You're right to try to unite us. And I was a fool for fighting you every step of the way. Maybe if I hadn't spent so much time distracting you, we would have seen this coming. And Dalinar just like blinks, dumbfounded. It says like, wait, this is Aelin saying this stuff?
It's like he's going, this is Aelin speaking these words, and then like pulls the helmet off. And it's like, surprise, it's Renarin in the shard plate.
Almost.
Hey, Dad. Oh,
yeah. Almost I would believe that, yeah.
We switched places. Thought it'd be fun. But we're in a big pickle, aren't we?
Now we're going to die.
Yeah.
But I do also like that in this moment, Dalinar, it says the guilt evaporates and he realizes that it is a selfish emotion. And he's like, would I want to have changed myself? No. Did it matter that the visions had been wrong about Sadeus? Like, no, I still would have done basically the same stuff that I did. That's the person that I want to be. And so he turns around and gives his speech to the soldiers that are around him, saying it's like he does his very dramatic like battlefield speech. We stand here alone on this battlefield because of who we are, because we loathe the people we would otherwise become. And he does a whole like, you know, it's not death is where everybody gets to, but it's the path that separates men, journey before destination, as we have established earlier. I will not be ashamed of what I have become. Other men may debase themselves to destroy me. Let them have their glory, for I will retain mine. And then he very dramatically times it so a shard blade pops into his hand at that moment. And they go back into battle, and he thinks, and so I die. And then he feels kind of, for a moment, he feels guilty about Renarin, who he's now leaving behind as High Prince of the Colin Princedom, although most of his armies will have been destroyed. And he's like, I never did get him that shard blade I promised him. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Stay strong and learn wisdom more quickly than your father did. Farewell. Which is a very sad point, but that is the end of our chapters. So, we move into predicaments. Dalinar's gotten himself in a bit of a pickle.
Just a bit.
What is going to happen next? Where are we going from here?
So, I feel like this is going to present an opportunity for Bridge 4 to run. I don't quite know how it'll present that opportunity, but I think like this is where they're going to have like their chance to just flee, get away, just because they've been talking about it so much. But then Kaladin is going to decide, no, I need to do the right thing. Guys, we're going back. And okay. I think, yeah, like just how disgusted he was by Sadeus's betrayal. I think he's going to, like even if they just leave the bridge for Dalinar's troops to get back, he's going to, Kaladin and his guys are going to do something. Maybe even they'll use their, you know, newfound spear drills to just provide a bit of auxiliary force for Dalinar. But point of it, Kaladin is going to come to Dalinar's aid. Dalinar is going to appreciate that. And he's going to take Kaladin into his army. And so there'll be all the conflict between Dalinar and Sadeus. Like, you left us to die and this guy saved us. And, you know, you've been fucking him over as one of your bridge crews. So it's going to set off like the civil war among the Alethi as a result of all that. And then right as that's reaching his crust, that's when, as I predicted before, Moash stabs Dalinar in the back. Because Moash is going to be super pissed that they gave up their escape attempt to save a Light Eyes, that he's going to take it out on the one they saved.
That would be a turn. If it looks like we're going to save Dalinar, and then at the last moment Moash turns around and stabs him, that would be if...
I think we will. It's like, because we've got how many chapters left?
We have, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 chapters and an epilogue left.
Yeah, so I could 100% see, like, you know, the next 2 or 3 chapters is Kaladin and Dalinar getting off the plains. Kaladin saves Dalinar. They go back to the camp. Another few chapters of camp politics and things really boiling to a head there. And then, like, in chapter 8 or whatever, that's when Moash makes his move as, like, one of Kaladin's trusted bridge crew. He's got a position close to Dalinar, and then he just plants the knife. So I think Dalinar will get back to the camps before he gets killed.
Okay. So that makes it just sadder for everybody. Everybody's like, hey, Dalinar made it. And then, oh no, he didn't.
Yeah.
Interesting. So we think that this is just because that they gave up their escape chance. We don't think that Dalinar is the person that Moash has been after because he's like, I want to kill somebody.
I think once they give up their escape attempt, like, Moash will resent Dalinar for it, because he's like, this, because we know Moash hates Light Eyes, and he's expressed a desire to kill them all. His hatred of Dalinar is not currently personal, but it will be once they give up their escape attempt to do it.
Okay.
But, like, that conversation with him and Kaladin is like, I will protect you to the ends of the earth. I'm like, well, that's going to backfire. Like, this is 100% a dude who is going to betray Kaladin at some point. I am in no way biased about this. No, sir.
We don't think that he's going to protect him to the ends of the earth?
Nope.
Interesting. So not only do we hate Moash, but he's a liar.
Yeah, he's a fink.
Okay.
I think that's the right word.
Sure.
Actually, I don't know.
I mean, I feel like fink works there. Yeah. Okay. I like this. Mainly, I like the idea that the book... Like, we think that Dalinar... You guys have been saying that Dalinar was going to die almost from when we first met him. So yeah. We have this point where it looks like Dalinar and Adolin, they're screwed. This is where they die. And you're like, no, the book's going to save them from that. And we're going to be like, oh, everything's okay. Only for the last second it to turn around and go the other way.
Yeah. There's your rug pulls all over the place. So yep. Many rugs.
So many rugs. Why does anybody have this many rugs?
Living in a fucking carpet warehouse.
Yeah. Okay, I like it.
Carpet warehouse.
Yeah, I agree with Dak to an extent. I do think that's where this is headed. I think Kaladin and Dalinar collide here when Kaladin's like, we can't just let these men die killed by these Parshendi. Like, this is not going to work. And so they're going to defy orders, which... And then, you know, Kaladin's going to have an escape because Matal never gave him the order. It specifically says, like, Matal saw them, saw they were already geared up, getting ready to go, and he just walked on. So the Kaladins would be like, well, you never gave us the order that we had to leave and leave that guy behind. So, you know, we just took it upon ourselves to do X. And so they're gonna, you know, create the bridge. Allow like an escape path for Dalinar and his army. I don't know that they're going to emerge victorious from the battle. They may have to just retreat, but the bridge will allow them to have a retreat. Or if the Parshendi are angry enough, because of the bridge crew, they may be funneled. Well, I guess they can jump the chasm. I was about to say maybe they'd be funneled across the bridge, but they could jump the chasm, so they're not going to be funneled anywhere. But anyway, they're going to be able to escape, and Dalinar will survive. I don't think any of that Moash stuff is going to happen with Dalinar. I disagree with Deck on that. I don't completely trust Moash because he obviously has an agenda. He wants to kill somebody. We know that now. But I don't think it's Dalinar. I don't know who it is, but I don't think it's Dalinar. Because he was talking about how awesome Dalinar was before. So, like, if he's had this killing agenda for a long time, he wouldn't be talking about how awesome the guy was.
That's true. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think it's Dalinar. I think it must be somebody else. That's, I think what's going to end up happening is, you know, Sidious is going to be confronted by Dalinar, who's like, yeah, you abandoned us. Like, I know, you know, very clearly. And I think the king is going to see it Dalinar's way. And I think Sidious is going to be ousted from his position. And he may even be killed. I don't know. But yeah, that's what I feel like is going to happen. Maybe that'll happen before the end of the book. I would guess we're at the 90% mark. So maybe it will, maybe it won't. That's what I'm guessing. That's what I'm predicting this week.
Okay. So yeah, but like you said at the beginning, mostly along the same lines that Dak was thinking, although, you know, maybe a little different here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If Dalinar survives somehow, then you bring up an interesting point of like, whose side does the king fall on here? Because he's he trusts Sadeus, but I mean, this is his uncle.
Dalinar, yeah, so. It's his uncle, it's his cousin, both of whom are like, yep, we witnessed this. And then there's also going to be the fact that there's bridge crews, soldiers that all witness the same thing. Like, it's a large amount of people who witnessed this event taking place. I feel like there's going to be enough witnesses against Sidious to be like, yep, this is what he did. And, you know, maybe we would have just let him get away with it if Dalinar didn't survive, but now that Dalinar survived and we're faced with the fact that there's an accusation here and there's proof of the accusation being true, we have to now shift the other way and oust Sidious or execute him or whatever.
Yeah. That makes sense. You're right. There's plenty of witnesses. A lot, like, Sadeus had 8,000 or 7,000 dudes in his army, and maybe they would all lie for him, but who knows? You know, if the king calls you up and asks you something.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, and there was a point made earlier in the book about how Sidious said, yeah, your men are all extremely loyal to you. So it's like, dude, if Sidious' men, like, if you see your high prince roll on a guy who's well known to be super honest and like treats his men well, what's he going to do to you, bro? Like, you might consider being like, yeah, maybe we should maybe we should just tell what we know. I feel like that might be in everybody's best interest.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Not wrong. What if it goes like this and, you know, things look like they're going Dalinar's way. And then Sadeus is like, well, Dalinar's dating your mom.
I still think it'll be okay.
You don't think that's the trump card?
No.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Fair enough. You've got solid logic there in how these things could go down. So I can't debate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you telling me that my logic is solid. Didn't need you to tell me that, but I appreciate it.
Are you sure you didn't need me to tell you that? I think you might have.
I mean, it's helpful. It's nice to know.
Okay, so I think we're all pretty well in agreement that Kaladin is going to go and help Dalinar out of this bind as much as he can. I think they're going to survive. I think they're going to get out of it. Kaladin's still got some light left, some stormlight that he wasn't willing to use, so I think he'll still be able to do that in some fashion. I think that Sadeus is actually behind an assassination attempt for Elikar.
Ooh.
Being High Prince of Information would actually get him into a position where he could control the information that's coming through and change any stories or invent stories to make him think that he's being attacked or not attacked, or like he's actually in quite a high position of power over Elikar now. And I think that would be the ideal spot for someone who is trying to overthrow or assassinate the king. It makes it more about Thaddeus trying to rule everything than it does like a war or a civil war between the armies. So I don't know whether Thaddeus will be taken out straight away. Not Thaddeus, Elokar will be taken out straight away. But I think then that would also sort of have a role and effect to whatever's going on with Dalinar and Navani as well. So Dalinar's on the out. Everyone thinks that they've been killed. Maybe they don't go back to camp straight away, although I don't know where else they would go. We also know that obviously Thaddeus is not interested in Dalinar's plans at all, so he's got to come up with another. Like he's alone. He's really got no allies in everywhere else in the army. Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure how it's all going to fall apart or come back together or anything then, but I think we'll end up with Kaladin, Dalinar being allies. Look, Thaddeus isn't open to any changes in their plans, right? So to lose the bridge crew that's causing him trouble, he might just think they're going to stay and die. Like, they're pretty bold. So this is possibly the escape plan. Like, they just don't go back under Dalinar's protection or something like that. Yeah. Sorry, it's a lot of rambling for...
You're fine. That's, you did bring out one thing that we hadn't touched on yet, is that we still don't know who was trying to kill Elokar. And so now we have this...
Or if there actually was an attempt at assassination. Like, we know things had been cut and we know things had happened, but would any of those actually have killed him?
Right, yeah. Fair point.
Yeah.
So now that Thaddeus has betrayed Dalinar, is there a possibility, like you said, that it was Thaddeus all along? It was Agatha all along?
Agatha all along. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. He's quite clearly good at deceit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to have, if he then is using basically Elokar as a puppet too, you know, he could actually be very, very dangerous in this war and for Alufkar. And like, look at all the books that we read, right? This is about people wanting to be in positions of power. Like, you've got this overall Cosmere, but then, you know, you've got somebody who's the top dog or somebody who's in some sort of position of authority who's doing the wrong thing. And it doesn't appear to be Elokar at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we don't know all that much about Elokar. We've met him a few times, but I agree. It doesn't seem he's not quite that.
No.
Yeah. Also, sorry, because it came up while I was while we were talking about that. We did learn Thaddeus's first name earlier in the book. It was just only said once, and so I think most of us didn't even pick up on it. But all the way back when Thaddeus gets appointed High Prince of Information, Elokar says, "I am appointing Bright Lord Toral Thaddeus to be High Prince of Information."
Oh. Toral. I like Doug better.
And Doug is the son.
Yeah.
Doug is his third name.
No, he was Doug Jr.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, good old Dougworth Jr.
Dougworth.
Like, but yeah, you guys have all predicted that Kaladin's going to turn back and try to help Dalinar, and somehow he's going to split off from the main body of Thaddeus's army. And how easy or hard that's going to be is an open question, I guess. I forgot to tell you guys what we're doing for next time so that you could have incorporated that into your predicaments, but I'll just throw it out there. I don't think that this would have helped you. We're going to do two chapters for next time because they're slightly beefier chapters, and they are called... Chapter 67 is called Words, and chapter 68 is called Eshonai, Eshonai. So for all the good that those would have done in your predicaments.
What?
Yep. But we've definitely had some patterns to the predicaments this time. I don't know whether I'm surprised or not surprised that everyone's thinking is going in more or less the same direction. You know, with some obvious differences, but just generally. It'll be interesting to see if you guys have correctly predicted the direction Brandon is going to go. We shall find out. In the meantime, we have one new email and one new patron. So let's do the email first.
Okay.
This email is entitled Thaddeus. It is from Michael, or Mike. And he says, Hey, Sander Lynch crew. Mike from VA here. Thaddeus, more like Chaddeus, am I right? Can't wait until book two when the crew finds out that he is the hero of ages.
Okay.
Just my annoyingly frequent reminder that I love the show and appreciate everything you all do. Also looking forward to seeing that little blue dot next to the Sander Lynch every Monday indicating there's a new episode. Crabs ahoy from Mike. So, thanks, Mike.
Wrong series. If you said Sadius turns out to be the words of Radiance, I might have believed it.
There could be a Hero of Ages in this too. You don't know.
I guess. The words of Radiance is Toral Sadius.
I mean, the next chapter is called Words, so maybe.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
Sadius is the words, yo.
Word. Word up.
Word up, boy.
And okay, we got one new ska level patron, and it is Mr. Tiggles, T-I-G-G-L-E-Z, Tigles.
Whatever. Hey, Mr. Tiggles, you can be a steel runner. How about that?
Yeah, that's a nice one. So thank you. If you want to check out our Patreon, I have put up my first reactions while reading various new Brandon books that have come out in the last year or so, starting, I think, every new book since the last Alcatraz book came out. I have done my reacting while reading thing. There hasn't been a new episode in a week or two at this point because I haven't started reading what I'm going to read next for it. I still haven't decided, so haven't had time. Been out of town, went to Nashville for a work conference thing. Had lots of yummy food and things, but there will be some more episodes of something going up there. I just, not yet. So feel free to check out the Patreon if you guys are interested. You can, Joe will assign you a faring power. Or leave us a review, yeah. A 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and Joe will jump you into the misting crew with a misting power.
I've been known to do that.
Or you can send us if you want to leave us a 5-star Spotify review and send a picture of it, same thing. If you want to send us an email, including a picture of your 5-star Spotify review, the email address is thesanderlanch@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, places like that. Not Twitter, it's X.
Yeah.
It's never going to be. I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's where all the good times are had. No big deal.
Like every single article online will always say X, formerly Twitter.
Well, that's because if you just say X, it's like, what the hell is that? Did you forget to edit this to put in the correct name of the...
Yeah, that's it. No one knows what the fuck they're on about.
Yeah.
I know. I just don't care.
So, yeah. Check us out all those places on the interwebs. As I said, we're doing two more chapters for next time, and that's going to put us... There's only 3 episodes left of this book, so we'll do 2 chapters, then 3 chapters, and then... to the end. So get ready, y'all. We are
about to launch it, huh?
We are right up against the end of this book and then moving on to whatever it is we will do next.
We're about to ski down the mountain that is this book.
Yeah, we've been sitting here waiting for a while. Be like, when's the Sander Lynch going to start? When's the Sander Lynch going to start? Well, Dalinar is about to be killed by 2 armies of Parshendi. I think the Sander Lynch has begun.
Yeah, the ski lift is finally at the top.
Yep.
So come back next week for 2 more chapters, Words and Eshonai. And actually there's still after that there's still 1 chapter left in part 4. So we're not quite to the end of part 4 with the next episode. But the one after that will start in part 4 and run into part 5.
Hold on, 3 chapters left of part 4?
Yes, as of now there are 3 chapters left in part 4.
And we still haven't had that Navani chapter.
We have not.
Running out of chances.
We are indeed. Maybe at the end of next week's episode, since that's right before we go into part 5, I'll pull out the part 5 page to tell you guys what perspectives will be in part 5. That might be interesting. I think there's at least 1 or 2 that you'll be like, oh, okay, I'm excited for that. So just like you were excited for the Navani perspective. That
oh, I was so excited for it.
So yes, thank you everyone who sent emails. Thank you patrons, people on the Discord, everyone out there just listening. We appreciate you. You're all awesome. 2 chapters for next time. Music by Miracle of Sound. And Wuzzing to the Time of Next. Colo. P.S. Fasher. Crab at thee.